robots are not coming to take your jobs, at least not yet. So think really carefully about that human and AI system, right? How do they fit together? Where can they do? In any domain you want to go to, whether it's marketing or HR, IT or sales, right? Or technology development, there is going to be a partnership for machines, for AI and for people. And if you can be at the forefront of thinking about how your company can do that, you will be highly marketable.
Hello and welcome back to a new episode of Where AI Works, conversations at the intersection of AI and industry. This podcast is brought to you by the Wharton School in collaboration with Accenture. My name is Christian Terbisch. I'm a professor here at Wharton, where I also co-direct our Mac Institute for Innovation Management. It's our goal to cut through the noise of the news cycle and to deliver actionable insights for business leaders. We do this by combining our cutting-edge research with real-world case studies from industry. Things are changing fast, so let's dive right in. On today's episode, we're going to explore how organizations can transform and redesign their operations using AI. We'll talk about workflows, productivity, and process automation. Joining me for today's conversation, I'm excited to introduce Radha Plum. Radha is the Vice President of AI Transformation at IBM. Welcome, Radha.
Thanks so much for having me.
Radha, I've been teaching workflow design and process management here at Wharton for almost 3 decades. Finding bottlenecks and eliminating inefficiency is really at the core of what I teach my students. Some industry pundits have predicted that with AI and automation, these skills would become less important. My experience over the last 3 years has really been the opposite. How do you at IBM think about bringing together the business needs of workflow design and the technical solutions of AI?
I would say, as a starting point, it's helpful to think about AI as part of a system of capability. So it's not a magical thing you're sprinkling over a domain or area. It's actually an augmentation to a workflow that right now is largely done by humans. So what does that mean? It means in your everyday job, you're looking at a workflow and thinking, how do I design this process with all the tools available to me? And the key insight for us at IBM in our approach is, let us think about what the workflow looks like and then how we embed automation in a streamlined, effective approach. So kind of mirroring back what you said, actually look, what would this workflow, what would this particular use case look like if I designed it right now with the set of AI tools I have in addition to what we're doing? Where can I eliminate, streamline, and then automate? And that's really where the magic of AI transformation lies.
Now, most companies we talk to report that their main focus of AI implementation is cost savings. Has this also been your experience?
It's a mix, right? So we just did earnings at IBM. We've hit about $5 billion in cost savings related to the optimization we do that embeds this sort of AI-first transformation. But it's really more than that, right? It is about making the smartest, most effective business possible. And that has both growth largely through productivity and accuracy improvement. So just as examples, we have AI-enabled HR agent called Ask HR that resolves over 90% of requests instantly, making our promotion cycle 75% faster. So that drives workforce improvements. Similarly, we have an IT agentic enabled approach that really resolves a huge fraction of the total inquiries digitally that does have savings, but it also has faster resolution for complex cases, almost 25% faster, which lets people get back to work faster. So we're looking at both how can we drive cost savings, but also how can we improve outcomes?
So really outcomes measured by quality, response times. How about personalization?
I think personalization is a complicated one in the context of AI. On the one hand, at the scale of a place like IBM, we really look at the set of tools where we can simplify, eliminate, and then automate. And that allows us to drive more standardization and scaled processes. So that's sort of the opposite dimension of personalization. What I think is great about AI is that when paired with our human experts, it lets us leverage humans for the types of targeted engagements you want to save the precious human time for and resolve a large number of cases otherwise. So you get more personalized responses through the combination, the human-machine pairing of rapid solution and discovery and then triaging to experts who can help address issues, whether those are HR issues or contract issues or IT issues.
What magnitude of productivity improvements do you typically see? I mean, if I'm a high school student and I have ChatGPT write my homework essay in English, I can get a 10x productivity improvement. I can do work that took me hours in minutes. But 10x is typically not what I see in practice. So what type of improvements do you see?
We see a huge range of improvements. And this is where your first question's on, what are your objectives? What are you going after? And then how are you thinking about measuring that? So let me give you some concrete examples. We have tools that we use for contract review in diligence processes. Those types of tools get a 95% accuracy in identifying tens of times, 30 times non-compliant contracts terms, which accelerates and reduces our risk reduction in that end-to-end process. So that is a huge increase in productivity that is paired with our experts. Similarly, I mentioned the Ask HR agent, which has cycles at 75% faster. So the question of productivity gains are large, but you have to understand what productivity means in the particular workflow to get a meaningful measure.
Give me some examples. How would you measure productivity as units of output per agent, or what type of metrics do you typically, what KPIs do you track?
I think you can look at productivity of speed of case resolution, right? So that is where when we talk about, for instance, you get 25% faster resolution of cases for IT, that is a productivity increase. But I think productivity is also accomplishing the given task faster, not just any task. So to your point, if you're identifying 30 times as many potentially non-compliant terms in the same period of time or less period of time, that's also a version of productivity measure where you're getting at least the same and probably better output in the same fixed period of time leveraging these tools. And that's where the focus on the use case and the workflow actually matters for driving that kind of output and metrics.
Interesting. What I like about what you're describing is you started with the argument of augmenting the human worker. There are various ways you can do this, right? You can have some form of AI assist. You can have an AI automation. You can have an AI audit. What type of frameworks or what type of blueprints do you use when you think about various forms of human-in-the-loop designs?
I actually like to think of it as human-on-the-loop, which is where in the process and how do you want to think about what is delegated and what that means? And that can range from, as you noted, things like task assistance to full-on automation and everything in between. So the way we approach it is actually ironically, from the human side, which is what are the set of inputs that are going into the humans performing the task now? And what are the set of outputs we need to come out of this stage in the process? Once you have those two endpoints, you can now look in between as to what are the core steps and activities that need to happen and what level of delegation do you want? Let me give you two concrete examples. In IT, you have a number of different kinds of cases of varying level of complexity. Those can range from everything from full automation, right? Just you get an error message. We know that error message is caused from that. You can use an agent that essentially connects natural language processing of the error information to an automated solution space, right? And that you can resolve a lot of inquiries. On the other hand, think about procurement. You can look at how you can speed the resolution of approvals for reimbursement and that kind of thing. You could automate that. You don't want to automate that, right? You want there to be a human check and human accountability, but also human review to drive that process. So you want to think about in the workflow where you can delegate, the degree to which you can delegate, but where you absolutely want to have that both human touch and human accountability. And that's really the approach we take.
Give me some tools that you're using to measure that human touch on the productivity side. So I grew up in a very Tayloristic kind of school of thought. And I mean, Taylor got a little bit out of fashion these days, but I still very much like that attitude of really measuring time. Do you use stopwatches? Do you do events in a computer log? Do you do some process mining technologies? How do you track really what human employees are doing?
The best way to say it is we use sort of all of the above. It depends on the workflow. So for things like HR cases, and generally think of case management as a broader area. We've done it in HR, but we've also done it in IT. We can look at the end-to-end timeframe from case initiation to case conclusion and estimate that. And we can get that both for the automated ones and then for the human ones. I think it's important to note you don't want to view those in a vacuum, right? You also want to measure things like customer satisfaction or the quality of the resolution. So we don't think about productivity as pure time in itself. As I said, you want to look at it as time plus quality of output to make sure you're not enforcing a trade between quality and quantity, essentially, in over-indexing on productivity. So we can use measures like that, but we can also use the total volume of tasks completed at the end state for other things. So contract reviews are a good example. Procurement, particular procurement activities are good examples of that, where rather than looking case end to end, we look at, for a given workflow in a given area, what was the output over this fixed period of time before and what is it after? And that gives you a day-to-day sense of it. So the degree to which you want to index on particular units of time, very small units for case management versus larger units for sort of throughput of output, is going to depend again on the workflow.
Interesting. So we talked about human in the loop, and you corrected me that you prefer human on the loop. So I do a lot of work in healthcare, and I'm thinking about some diagnostic tasks, maybe in radiology, maybe in mental health. We now have the AI do more of the work, and the human is doing more of the exception handling, the hard cases. How does this change the human work, the cognitive load, the stressfulness? In the old days, I had like a couple of easy cases when I could chill, and now the AI does the easy cases. Is the work getting harder for the human?
I think that's slightly loaded. I think the way I would reframe it is this. When we talk about what the AI is doing, what we want to think about, especially in highly regulated and highly complex spaces. So you talked about healthcare before coming to IBM. I was the chief AI officer at the Pentagon. We looked at a lot of warfighting cases. We want to have two things we're looking for the tool fundamentally. Does it do the thing I want it to do? And does it not do a bunch of things I don't want it to do? So in the case of healthcare, what we're doing is saying we can now shed some cognitive loads, some pieces, if we can rely on the tool doing what it wants to do and not wanting to do, and focus my human attention on cases that require nuance where I don't have faith that the tool can do the thing I want it to do. Is that more cognitive load or less? I don't know, right? Because for a trained medical professional, being able to focus on complex cases with more time and confidence in the tool may reduce the total cognitive burden. So I think the question here is really a question of AI governance and that delegation question, rather than a question of cognitive load and difficulty for the human who's partnering with that machine technology.
I like that. The logic is, if we can free up work for the experts, that's good. If then the employer, the management, the government comes back and takes that freed up time and puts more cases on that, well, that is something that we should debate.
Yes.
Interesting.
Exactly.
So one thing I've noticed always in the IT world is that really poor cross-functional integration and siloed information systems are the biggest hurdles that when we do good process design, we have to jump over. Do you see AI implementations reinforcing those silos, or are they really ways to overcome them?
It's not so much reinforcing the silos, but your ambitions with AI will be limited by your ability to integrate data. Like fundamentally, AI is data hungry, and its best output is going to be when it has the most data. Now, there are lots of reasons why we don't want to give AI tools all the data it could ever use. But for an enterprise, thinking about how you enable that type of data access and integration is really important if you have ambitions to drive significant changes in productivity and in cost savings with AI tools. On the IBM side, we actually went on over the last 2 years a pretty major data journey. Like most large enterprises, we have a whole range of different siloed data sources that need to have a standard data governance and data process. And that sort of layers of data integration and then data governance are what enables now over the last several months and really over a year to now successfully be able to focus on the workflows and AI solutions. You have to have that data foundation for it to be useful.
You mentioned the work that you're doing at IBM. IBM is known for its client zero strategy, with the idea that you use AI internally before you sell it to your clients. So that means really your internal operations today should give us a glimpse at the future. What type of things should our listeners expect in the next year in terms of cutting-edge workflow redesign?
as you mentioned, at IBM, we have this client zero model. I like to joke that it's, you know, a version of us drinking our own champagne, where we take our own tools at really every level of the technology stack. So starting from hybrid cloud through the data management and data infrastructure through governance with a federated ecosystem of application and all the way up to the orchestration layer to create that single pane, that single view that lets you use all those different applications and apply it. We've seen really great returns on that in a number of core domain areas, in particular in HR, in IT, and in procurement, where there are tasks that are large volumes that involve case management. And I've rattled through some of those statistics, but you know, 95% of our HR cases can be handled through that. On the procurement side, we've got 100% of contracts going through our M&A and diligence processes with 95% accuracy reviews and identifying 30 times more potentially non-compliant pieces, right? So we've got those. I think going forward, we're really looking at areas now where you want that human on the loop integrated approaches. So how do we look at procurement, places like accounts payable, vendor selection and vendor management? How do we look at areas like finance where you're doing spend reporting and recording revenue and analyzing it? Those are areas where we think AI has tremendous promise. They're data intensive. They have different types of data, both structured and unstructured data. Putting those together and allowing both automation and agentic support has real potential, but figuring out how to pair it in that workflow with the right type of governance and accountability to ensure that you're not just taking output, for instance, in finance or in procurement and running with it is where that is. So I think over the next year, we'll see a number of critical domain areas like that, where we've got more mature approaches and more advanced approaches to integrating humans and machines, really leveraging those AI solutions.
Do you see the development and deployment of AI solutions be inherently more centralized or more decentralized compared to other IT solutions? You mentioned like HR, IT, procurement. Are those functions able to create these agents and deploy these agents themselves? Or does it always require getting back to the kind of the core AI experts?
I think it's probably both. I think right now we're in early days and there are two kind of movements. There's a top-down movement where you identify areas of promise and you prove out that promise and show it. That's a lot of what I do at IBM. That's a lot of what the client zero stories are. But there's also the bottom-up solutions, the areas where people who are in the workflow day-to-day have their little ideas. I mean that in the best possible way, very specific, targeted, small ideas that can be solved with particular types of automation or agentic flows. Both of those are happening. Right now, the big movements are happening top down. And I think over time that will change. It'll change for two reasons. One, we'll have more tools that enable it. You've seen code assistance and low code, no code environment. We have orchestration layers, including through IBM, that allow you to sort of manage these agents and build very simple ones yourself. So with the cost and difficulty in building it is going down. Additionally, people are getting the sense of what agents can do. These top-down solutions don't just solve problems, so they do. They also prove the very concreteness of what AI can do. It's not a magical fix-all. It has specific benefits and those can be deployed. And I think showing the promise of that really kind of whets the appetite of people to start thinking about how they could use it. And I think that piece too will allow more bottom-up sort of enthusiasm and interest in figuring out how to do it.
Let's maybe pivot to IBM at the corporate level. When our listeners hear the words IBM and AI, I'm sure most of them think of Watson and its famous performance in Jeopardy. Can you give us an overview of IBM's portfolio of AI solutions?
Yeah, I think the way to think about it is to think across your stack. You know, we have a set of solutions that really manage and work at the cloud level that allow people to invest in the reality, which is you're going to have cloud, whether that's an IBM cloud or another hyperscaler cloud, but you're probably going to have some on-premises storage and data needs. And how do you manage that ecosystem effectively with the tools that you layer on top? So we have a set of products at that layer, then a set of products that help you on the data management and data integration side. We've talked a little bit about the IBM's own journey, but we had, of course, the Watson X Data, which is really built out of that experience of taking legacy data systems plus new data, putting them together. Next layer up, and really importantly, is this governance layer, which is slightly unsexy, but really critical, especially as you look at scaled enterprises, which thinks about the permissions of data and users and attributes, but also the particular integrations that applications that sit on top of it will need, and whether those are appropriate given the corporate sort of rules and settings, but also the types of risks companies want to take. So pairing those data and governance levels really allows a responsible and accountable approach to AI deployment. And then at the top of the stack, of course, we have Watson Orchestrate, which helps orchestrate these applications. We have our own AI application, Watson AI, with some foundational models. But we also have partnerships with other companies, most notably recently with Anthropic and their foundational models. So the idea, I think, for IBM is, especially for enterprises, especially in this business-to-business market, if you're looking to deploy AI, you can do it at any level of the stack, and it can pair at different levels with what is in-house there. And that's, I think, that federated, multi-layered ecosystem that can meet companies where they are in their digital transformation journey is really kind of IBM's current set of offerings.
Let me double click on the governance piece. Is that a big distinction between a big company, an established company, and a startup, where the big company has to figure out the governance first versus a startup starts with the technology and figures out the governance later? Or how do you see that?
Any good company of any size wants to think about the governance before it deploys tools. I think the risks and the impact to the company scale as the company scales, right? Both on the substance, just will it work? Do the right people have the right access and right information? But also, is it safe? Like, are there going to be errors? Are there going to be privacy violations? Are there going to be et cetera, right? All of those are critical considerations, increasingly critical in a world with things like the EU AI Act and potential regulatory risks. So companies of any size want to think about what governance looks like. How much architecture you want to put on that, I think, is going to vary based on the risks in the company, but I don't think you want to elide over it, even if you're a startup.
Now, IBM is known as one of America's most innovative companies. If you just think about rankings of patent filings, you folks have been at the top for many decades now. How has the value of R&D changed over the days of AI, in particular the time from coming up with a new technology and then seeing the business value?
I think the place to start is there's always really deep and broad value for that type of foundational research. And at IBM, you know, we have a whole research arm that really does that across the spectrum. I think what AI brings into the picture is this much more rapid connection between research, development and testing and piloting and experimentation and scaled deployment. And you can have these agile loops and structures so we can hear from our colleagues in research where they have potentially innovative solutions that, and we can think about where they might be applied. We can move in weeks and months instead of years to testing, leveraging our client zero model to test new innovative solutions. And where they work, we can then scale them in IBM and bring them to market as a product offering. And that's really this productivity flywheel that IBM has, where we can test things much more quickly and bring them to scale because we ourselves are an enterprise, you know, with hundreds of thousands of people and globally that also happens to be a technology company.
Fascinating. As somebody who sits at the source of a lot of the AI cutting edge developments, anything in particular that you're looking forward to coming out over the next couple of years?
I am really interested to see how we start integrating the foundational models, this very healthy and robust ecosystem of applications across domains that are using them, in the reality of workflows in companies. Because I think there is tremendous potential to do this at scale and see the returns. How you fit those puzzle pieces together is still tricky, and we haven't quite figured out what the operating system for AI is. So I'm watching closely those layers that sit above and below that application marketplace, because I think that's where we're going to see the real innovation and getting to scale. It's the assembly line of automobiles version for AI. How do we get that sort of rapid production and scaled use out into enterprises?
Any advice for a young MBA student who is at the beginning of their career? Should they go down more the people side because everything else is going to be automated by technology? Should they learn about coding and AI?
So I'll confess, I also teach an MBA class at Wharton, and I just had this conversation yesterday, which is killer robots are not coming to take your jobs, at least not yet. So my advice is think really carefully about that human and AI system, right? How do they fit together? Where can they do? In any domain you want to go to, whether it's marketing or HR, IT or sales, right? Or technology development, there is going to be a partnership for machines, for AI and for people. And if you can be at the forefront of thinking about how your company can do that, you will be highly marketable.
On that visionary and optimistic note, thank you so much, Radha, for joining me on the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
As we wrap up today's episode, allow me to reflect on some of the implications of my discussion with Radha. As an operations professor, I felt right at home. AI implementation does not replace good workflow design. Eliminate, simplify, and only then automate. Good workflow design is especially essential when we're dealing with human in the loop, or as Radha would say, human on the loop type of processes. I was also impressed by IBM's client zero strategy. You're much more credible selling me a solution if you yourself are adapting it. I think we here at Wharton could learn from this attitude, and so can many others. That brings us to the end of our time together. Thank you so much for listening. Please follow us so you don't miss an episode, and be sure to tune in next time when I'll be speaking to Dr. Pari Pandhari Pandey, the chair of the Department of Radiology at Penn Medicine. You've been listening to our podcast, Where AI Works, Conversations at the Intersection of AI and Industry, brought to you by the Wharton School in collaboration with Accenture. I'm Christian Tabish, and on behalf of all of us here at the Wharton School, thank you for listening.